the more power you have, the more you should feel like you have to get in front of the public and be transparent about what you're actually doing. And if you don't, that's automatically a red flag for people that says, what the fuck are you doing?
I just have to wonder if Bill Gates wasn't operating on some insider trading information when he shorted Tesla, because he's one of the architects behind the entire ESG movement, had made a ton of money off of said movement, and knew that Tesla was never going to be given approved status by the ESG system, and thought that would limit Elon's ability to accomplish his goals.
We need to see who is actually putting their skin in the game. You know, how many journalists are out there actually doing exposés on George Soros? There's not that many. Why is that? Because he probably wants it that way, right?
Because he pays for like 99% of the salaries of people in media.
Right.
I am seeing the rise of a class of political activists or even politicians outright, I feel like have a level of authenticity and trustworthiness and correct insight and the correct tool set to implement that insight that I've, you know, like I've never seen the Tulsi Gabbards of the world actually be able to succeed. I've only ever seen them get destroyed, like the Democratic Party tried to destroy her. You know, this is for you, you know, the Bernie Sanders of the world, who actually have their thumb on the pulse of what are some of the big issues in the country. And
RFK Jr.
The RFK Jr.'s. Right now, I'm really excited about Vivek Ramaswamy. Like, a lot of these guys who are incredibly intelligent and really understand, you know, even, you know, like Bernie, I wouldn't necessarily agree with his proposed solutions to problems, but I would agree with his diagnoses of some of the problems. And even some of the most crazy woke people, there are elements of truth in some of the problems that they say are actually problems. And like, we can, if they actually care about realizing a positive outcome for all Americans, then we can debate on the best way to actually achieve those outcomes. So anyways, like I'm thinking about what is the subconscious rubric that I am using to filter through potential people to have in power. It determines, you know, who am I excited about and who am I not. And one of the things that I realized was that one of the things that the podcast medium provides to us is this ability to really go along the mental ride with a candidate or, you know, a politician or a business leader, and really think through a problem and its solutions. And what I realized was that, you know, if you can take two figures and you can put them in opposition to each other, and you can pretty clearly see then some of the differences here. And so the two figures I'm going to use are the evil political billionaires, Elon Musk and George Soros. Like, those are two very, very different people.
Yeah.
And they go about things into very, very different ways. The one thing that they share in common is they're both extremely intelligent, and they're both billionaires. And I guess the other thing that they now share in common is that they both have pretty major political agendas. But when you look at Elon, what he is trying to do politically aligns with what he has said in public over and over and over again for years. Elon is...
And not to interrupt, not only just said, but the actions also then back up what he said, right?
Yes. Yeah. And so, yeah, Elon has been willing to subject himself to a pretty high level, in previously unheard of level of transparency to the public for a billionaire CEO at the level that he has been able to achieve. Like, you know more about Elon, how his companies work, what his personal life is like, than any other Fortune 500 CEO alive today.
And his mistakes as well, and his missteps, and his foot and mouth moments.
Yep.
The whole gamut.
I think this is one of the reasons why he has this, you know, I don't give a shit attitude on X, is that, and always has had that attitude even before he owned the platform, that he wants to live in a maximally transparent and authentic way for him. He wants to say what he actually believes. He wants to do the things that he views as being important to achieve the things that he wants to achieve. And he doesn't like when people get in his way and his ability to do those things. And he'll, you know, tell you to your face if you happen to be that person in the moment. And then if you, you know, contrast that against someone like George Soros, who we know he has a lot of money. We know he has political agendas. He's one of those people that always gets brought up in, you know, conspiracy theory conversations as the shadowy guy behind the scenes who's orchestrating evil plots. Well, why is that? And I think one of the things that, you know, in a hypothetical world where George Soros is actually a really good person, the level of secrecy that he employs in doing whatever it is that he's doing definitely leaves a lot of room for interpretation on the table or what it is that he's doing. And so I think that, you know, even if he is a good person doing good things, doing all of that behind the veil of non-transparency, makes it a lot harder for someone like me to have confidence in an ability to trust him to have my best interests at heart. It's like, I don't know what his actual intentions are. So are his intentions aligned with my best interests? I don't know. I can't know. And then, like I said, that's assuming that he's a good person trying to do good things. And the other thing is, if he's a good person doing good things, then why is he so secretive? Because if he's a good person doing good things, then what's the problem with transparency?
Yeah.
So that's one axis that is very high, I think, in my ranking of things that I view as important when I'm looking at people. You know, how many interviews has Elon Musk participated in, both long form and short form and forums all over the world, versus how many times have you heard George Soros speak in public? Like, there's a lot of people that he speaks to, but, you know, the public isn't privileged with what he has to say very much.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you think is the correlation between people, the amount of time people are willing to be transparent and have, let's say, long form conversations and letting themselves out there for people to see, versus doing good in the world? Like, is there an overlap there? Like, how strong is that correlation? Like, can we think of the opposite? Can we think of people that are out there being transparent that are doing bad things in the world?
Well, I think, you know, right there you have to kind of separate perceived transparency with actual transparency. Like, you can be out in the world going on a PR campaign for a XYZ thing when in reality you're doing, you know, you're working against XYZ thing. And in that, you know, I think you have to take more factors into account to uncover that gap. And we'll get spicy here for a second. I was just thinking about this today, you know, going out on complete speculation and opinion branch here. But I'm thinking about the fact that Bill Gates shorted Tesla. And Bill Gates says that he really cares about the climate. And he's donated a lot of philanthropic money that's supposed to be for the good of humanity. But either he's just naive, or, I mean, we certainly know he, during his business career, was absolutely diabolical in his willingness to use whatever dirty underhanded tricks were available to him to win in the marketplace.
Well, the Melinda Gates Foundation was born after he was found guilty of antitrust, right?
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I guess I think so.
Around that time. Someone check us.
Yeah. I was pretty young when that happened, but I know that it was somewhere back there. But so all of that to say, you know, we've seen this massive push towards an ESG agenda around the world over the last 20 years. And as people like Alexandra, Tesla Boomer Mama, shout out, have pointed out, this ESG movement was largely a accounting bait and switch game that allowed, you know, people who were absolutely the worst climate offenders to score well by ESG metrics so that they could get this preferential investment status. And I just have to wonder if Bill Gates wasn't operating on some insider trading information when he shorted Tesla, because he's one of the architects behind the entire bullshit ESG movement, had made a ton of money off of said movement, and knew that Tesla was never going to be given approved status by the ESG system, and thought that that would limit Elon's ability to accomplish his goals.
Mm. Interesting. So he was betting on the system doing its job.
The system that he helps to build,
he helped create. Yeah. I mean, so it's impossible to know because it's very hard to get a read on the guy. Right. And that kind of talks about the sunlight razor, right? It's like the more transparent, the more likely that the person is trustworthy and they're doing good for mankind. I think, so here real quick, Bill, the Gates Foundation was founded in 2000. The decision for the antitrust lawsuit was passed in 2000. Same year that he was found guilty of, monopolistic, practices.
Business practices.
Yep. Yeah, he founded the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation as a, you know, probably to fix his persona, his public persona,
also protect his assets.
Correct.
I'm sure.
Yeah. I think the and just for the people that are tuning in, this is something Hans sort of is trying to figure out how to solve for, which is like almost creating a database of sorts or a way of sorts for the public to know who are the most trustworthy folks in our society that have the ability to impact society, that have power, yeah, that have money, that have influence, that have the knowledge, right? It's almost like, and I think what's super interesting now,
a public trust bullshit meter.
Yes. The KPI could even be like a little needle from red to green. Bullshit, trustworthy. Anyway, I think the what's super interesting about this conversation is that this is totally where we're going as a society, right? If you think about the movement of, like, what I don't think Trump getting elected in 2024 was profound. I really think it was profound, and it the underpinning of it, in my opinion, is the public voting for the more transparent candidate. I think that's ultimately what happened, is that the public found that they could trust Trump more than Harris because of Trump's willingness to be transparent and utilizing things like long form podcasts to allow the people to see who he is. You know,
I would agree, but maybe make a distinction. I really don't know how much this election had to do with Harris. I just don't know that she wasn't a significant enough personality and didn't say enough significant things to really sway this election one way or the other. I was listening to Breaking Points and they were breaking some news that Biden's internal polling showed that he was going to lose the Electoral College 400 votes.
Damn.
Instead of, the 312 or whatever it is. So she may have actually helped the party overall compared to what it would have been. I think the distinction is not like trusting Kamala Harris versus trusting Donald Trump. I think the bigger distinction is trusting Donald Trump over the media and what the media is telling you. Yeah. I think the media is a big, like, is a vote against media lies.
Yeah.
And for, like, I feel like
that's fair. Even, that's fair.
Even though Donald Trump tells lies a lot of times, that they're a lot less significant and certainly a lot less often than the media's lies.
Yeah. And they have far less consequences than the lies that are propagated through mainstream media, legacy media, because those are widespread. These lies.
The more important the topic, the harder they lie to you in the media.
Yeah,
it's like the maximum lie is located at the maximally important point of topic.
Yeah, and so sort of like, so the public is searching for truth. They're searching for things they can trust. They're searching for people that they can put their trust on, so that society can move forward in this new media landscape, in this new landscape of people trying to figure stuff out together and not taking what the single sources of information tell you to feel or think. Now it's like, now people are much more on their own, and they're still going to utilize sources of information like this podcast as a way to like think about the world, let's say, right? But it's become much more fragmented, and it's become much more aligned with regular people and individuals versus conglomerates or powerful forces of propaganda.
Yeah.
It's come down to the root level. It's come down to like the basic unit of like humanity, which is like the individual, you know?
Well, if you think about what the media landscape that we lived in 40 years ago looked like compared to today, you know, what was the chance that a random person in the country could have 2 hours to sit down and talk to a political candidate and ask them questions? Like, the people that got to do that were the donor class or the media. And then, so like the real world contact was those people. And then, you know, some contact during the campaign process in battleground states. Like if you live in Pennsylvania or, you know, one of these places, you might actually get to go to a town hall and talk to Bill Clinton or George Bush or, you know, whoever, and get some sort of a read on them. And that contact would still be limited, but, you know, you would at least have some in-person way to make a judgment call.
But it was reserved for only the smallest percentage of the population.
Yeah, almost no one. And then, you know, once the powerful people with the political capital and the people who had access to the media, once they had made their decision on who was going to be the anointed candidate, then they can weave whatever narrative they want to weave through the media. And they can, you know, just like we could take this podcast that's going to be, you know, we'll say it's at least an hour long. I don't know. Maybe we go for two. We could edit that down to 5 minutes and we could make it say whatever the heck we wanted to say, regardless of what we actually said in the 1 to 2 hours. And that's what they were doing with all of these candidates.
Now, shout out 60 Minutes.
Yep. With the podcast medium, you know, millions of Americans, and then, you know, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of Americans have listened to political candidates ask the important questions that Americans want to ask them and have them answer at length in podcasts. Like the context that Americans have to make decisions is infinitely greater today than it was 40 years ago. And
even 20 years ago.
That's going to get, you know, even more. That's a trend that's accelerating and going to get more profound over time. Because when you listen to, you know, Trump on Rogan for 3 hours, or especially someone like Vivek Ramaswamy, like do the entire podcast tour, talk to everybody. And like you can hear him in full throughout an entire conversation. And then you can stack that conversation up against 10, 15, 20 other conversations. And you can have, you know, hundreds of hours worth of unique thought processes, answers, and the insight that comes from being able to build a model of how they see the world, how they think through problems, how they're going to handle the specific issues that you care about, that are way higher than anything that we've seen in the past. And I think this is going to be really good for American politics moving forward, because I think that, you know, as this becomes more and more of a dominant form of getting you elected, it's also going to be a more and more dominant form of the public holding you accountable while you're in office. That, you know, when you run on XYZ platform and you communicate that on Joe Rogan, and then you want to go back for re-election, well, Joe Rogan's going to be like, well, last time you were here, you said you're going to do this, this, and this, but you did that, that, and that. Like, are you, you know, were you lying to us then, or were there legitimate reasons that you had to change your position? Like, and if there are legitimate reasons, then they have plenty of time to explain what the legitimate reasons are. And maybe we go along with that, or maybe we say, hey, no, you like betrayed us and that was horse crap, and we're never going to vote for you again because you're a lying liar.
Yeah. You know what would be very interesting to see, to kind of gauge how willing these people are to like have long form conversations, which are the likeliest place for an individual to find truth or to find the character of a person. I literally just take like, start with like powerful people and then politicians. So powerful people go from a descending list of like richest to not as rich, which is still probably the billionaire level or whatever, just very, very wealthy. Then hours of long form conversations. Like, what is that overlap? You know, like Elon Musk has how many hours of long form conversation? Probably like 50, 100, like unique conversations. And then what's number two? Jeff Bezos, like 4 hours, 8 hours. I don't know. And I think that's an interesting way of like starting, of saying like, okay, like who are the people that are willing to put themselves out there?
Yeah.
Like, just because you have a lot of money doesn't mean you're somehow, in this society that we live that values transparency, the more power you have, the more you should feel like you have to get in front of the public and be transparent about what you're actually fucking doing. And if you don't, that's automatically a red flag for people that says, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I think this is another, this gets into the other. So I think transparency is a huge one. And the other one is skin in the game. And, you know, one of the differences between Elon Musk and a lot of other people on this front is that he's willing to talk to the people directly. And with that comes accountability for what he says to a certain level. I mean, he's got a lot of money, but, you know, Jeff Bezos, you know, I don't know if this really lands in the skin of the game metric, or if this lands in the transparency metric, which is why, you know, this is something complicated that we're thinking through, that I'm trying to figure out. But Jeff Bezos wants to talk to you, but he doesn't necessarily want to talk to you directly. He wants to talk to you through the Washington Post. And,
yeah,
you know, a lot of powerful people own information networks, and they have an agenda. They just don't want to tell you what their agenda is. Why? You know, I think that that is an important question that needs to be asked a lot of times. And I think there is overlap between skin in the game. You know, for Elon, he's willing to make a bold bet. And if that bold bet works out, he wants to be rewarded for succeeding on something that was hard but important. But then also, if he fails, then he's on the hook for the failure and the consequences of the failure. He, you know, is pretty much the last person in the world to back down from being held accountable for, like, I guess being robbed of the opportunity to benefit from accountability when he succeeds. And yeah, he's not afraid of, you know, if that goes wrong and he doesn't succeed, well, you know, so be it. I guess I should have done better, or we should have done better, or we failed at, you know, solving the problem. And so, oh, well. Yeah, that's how, I guess, how are you thinking about the, how much does skin in the game versus sunlight or transparency play into how much you trust different powerful individuals in political or economic life?
I think that's a great question. To me, it's like, if you, like, where my head goes is that if your assets or your skin in the game is tied companies that are objectively doing good for society, right? Which I would argue is almost all companies in a way. You know, if a company makes a product or service that makes people happier, better, makes their life easier, they're able to do more things, that's a pro for society, right? I think, yeah, but that's where it gets like the transparency one is easier to think through, because it's kind of like it's like the art and the science of the thing. You know, the transparency is like the art of it, is the subjective nature of being a human, but all of us have sort of good gut feel to kind of decide or think, hey, this is a good person, this is somebody I can trust, this is not somebody I can trust, like they're shady, blah, blah, blah. Like we can gather those like soft things about that person using our soft skills, right? To try and decide if somebody should be trustworthy or not. Skin in the game is much more objective. It's much more like scientific. It's like, what percentage of your net worth are in maybe public companies or private companies that are creating value for society, right? So like, if someone's like, I'll just use a very stupid example. If someone's majority of their net worth is derived from like NGOs, or they're derived from government contracts, let's say, I'm probably going to trust that person a lot less than like, say, someone like a Jeff Bezos, who has quite a bit of his net worth tied in a rocket company and the Washington Post and Amazon or whatever, right? Just because to me, I don't know how to quantify it, that person's doing much harder things versus trying to sort of take the skin yeah, they're off definitely the top of the taxpayer. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they're subjecting their efforts to the reality check of the market.
Correct.
Instead of, you know, some other mechanism that's maybe more easy to game. I guess,
how many wealthy people are out there that make a living off of the taxpayer? You know what I'm saying?
Lot.
Yeah, I don't like those people. I don't trust those people, because those people have found an opportunity in our broken system to siphon taxpayer money
for their
inefficient business.
In San Francisco specifically are getting rich because they're siphoning money from the great compassion that Americans have towards homeless people.
Yeah.
But the homeless people aren't actually getting any of those resources or money. They're just being allowed to be in that place, and then someone's getting money for them being in that place, but it's not the poor people.
Yeah. And so the difficulty there is like differentiating between meaning well and failing, right? Versus on purpose doing a bad job because you're just getting paid a bunch of money.
Incompetence versus grifting, or even
exactly.
And then sometimes maybe not incompetence. Maybe you are taking on something that's really hard and you can be competent, but it can be so hard that even exactly. though you were competent that you failed. So yeah, there's hard, definitely. Right? Yeah.
It becomes much harder to measure somebody off of the skin in the game. I mean, but there's very simple ones there's a very small number of people that it's easier to derive that they have skin in the game, right? Yep. And it's obvious that they have skin in the game, you know?
Well, I think Elon's endorsing of Trump maybe is a good example of, like, Elon campaigned for Trump in Pennsylvania with his face, on his platforms, with his money. Like, if Trump wins, Elon benefits. If Trump doesn't win, like, he is attached. Yeah, like, so that's what I'm talking about with, when I'm talking about skin in the game, that if he's successful, he wins, but he actually is on the hook for the bill if he fails.
But the thing is that is a singular effort. That is like, it's like, that singular effort is so obvious. Right? Like, can you think of anyone else that went through that level of personal, the Elon always does is like he bets big. He goes all in with everything he does, right? He literally goes all in and is like, well, if I win, I win. If I lose, I lose. But because I'm going all in, I'm going to have confidence that I'm like there's no greater all in investor than Elon Musk or all in better. He just knows where to go all in. And when he goes all in, he wins. Like, I feel like every time. Fucking time.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he doesn't
lose. Is what Peter Thiel said about him, that, you know, he and Peter and David Sachs wanted to write a book about PayPal, and they were going to have a chapter on Elon. They said, you know, we'll title this one, The Man Who Knew Nothing About Risk, because they didn't believe that he could do the things that they thought that he said he could do and that he wanted to do and that he thought were important to do, which is why they fired him as CEO and, you know, coordinated this coup behind his back when he was in South Africa and took over the company from him because they thought he was crazy and insane.
Yeah.
But then, you know, after watching him leave that venture and start both Tesla and SpaceX, which were insane ideas at the time, everyone thought he was going to fail on both counts. So for him not only to succeed on one, but to succeed on both, then Peter's like, well, you know, he obviously knows something about risk that the rest of us don't know. And that's true. Like, he went all in on PayPal. He went all in on SpaceX and Tesla. That worked out. He has gone all in since then on, like, stainless steel for the Starship.
On X. One could make the argument.
All in on X. I mean, he has gone all in on AI. Well, so, and I think this is one of the points where he did not go all in on OpenAI. He went half in. He's like, I want this to happen. This is important. But, like, I don't really want to be involved, you know, in the nuts and bolts. Like, this is important. Go do this. I'm going to trust somebody else. So he doesn't go all in on OpenAI. That blows up in his face. So now he's all in on XA.
Interesting, huh? So it's like don't go halfsies with Elon. You know, like let him go all in and then just like hitch your wagon to his horse.
Yep.
And then he'll take you to the promised land.
And I think that one was particularly painful for Elon because he had already learned that lesson with Tesla to begin with when he hired Martin Eberhard and the Tarpening guy Ian, whatever his name was. That, you know, Elon talks about that as being a moral failure on his part for not just embracing the role of CEO from the get-go and trying to outsource that hard work to someone else. And then for him to make that same mistake with OpenAI, I feel like he's extra pissed that he didn't just do it himself to begin with.
Yeah, for sure. So I think then, so back to my original point of like, that his approach is singular in nature, right? So, which makes it easy to like I feel like that's what sparked the conversation more than anything, right? Like, we'll just say like how he involved himself in this political cycle was one of the births behind this Sunlight Razor that you're thinking through. Is that a fair assessment?
Yes. Yeah. Like, why am I, you know, and I think not just me, even people that would lean left, but understand Elon in the Tesla community, you know, maybe they wouldn't necessarily be the type to have been super upset with Elon for getting too political, but maybe they would disagree with him. But even a lot of those people right now are excited about the fact that he has an opportunity to reshape the political landscape in the United States because he's such a good first principles thinker. And like, I think someone's going to be in Trump's ear during this transition. I would rather that be someone like Elon than just about anyone else on the planet. And so, yeah, but trying to figure out, okay, how can we communicate, like derive a set of principles that codifies in some hopefully quantitative way eventually, what is it about Elon Musk that's so exciting in that capacity versus anyone else in history? When like, you know, politics is usually extremely depressing. It's like an exercise in futility of how can everyone be disappointed in an optimal way for the whole.
Yeah, for real. But I think, yeah, it's like building confidence in the public that as an individual, you're going to be able to create positive change, you know? And so like, which comes with a certain amount of trust that's already been
earned.
Like that you've already won. You know? Yep. And so like when you go do these things, people are like, okay, that's a good thing that you're getting in there. Yeah. I mean, it's such a fascinating, thing to think about it, And I think what my gut tells me is that this will become a lot easier to put down. Like it will be a lot easier to actually make it easy for people to decide who they can trust. Once we have this new media landscape starts to take hold, because this new media landscape needs to start extracting the data points needed to be able to make those decisions, right? We need to see those long form conversations. We need to see who is actually putting their skin in the game. You know, how many journalists are out there actually doing exposés on George Soros? There's not that many. Why is that? Because he probably wants it that way, right?
Because he pays for like 99% of the salaries of people in media.
Right. So like that's where I think this new media landscape needs time to sort of churn, and it needs time to ramp up, and it needs time to kind of, again, start extracting those data points for us to sit down and actually analyze them. But I think the combination of transparency and skin in the game, and then also track record against helpful, like objectively good outcomes for society, I think those three things is ultimately what builds trust, you know?
Yep. Well, and I think the other element of this for someone like Elon is the track record of not only being courageous and willing to take on big challenges then, but also being successful. And so it's like, you know, the difference between an Elon and a Bernie is I may think that Bernie understands that there's a real problem, but I don't trust that he understands what the right cause of that problem is. And then if he can't observe the right cause, then I certainly don't expect him to be able to find the correct solution to that. Whereas with Elon Musk, like we've seen him have an extremely good track record of identifying correct root causes and then building first principle solutions that address those causes in some of the hardest problems to solve in the whole world. And, you know, like, especially as X gets to be more successful, and then I think the same thing will be true with XAI, like, for whatever reason, people thought that his ability to do that only was valid within engineering, you know, like physical things, whether that's rockets or cars.
Yeah.
But like, as X has... It certainly is the number one source of news around the world today. I know a lot of people are blind to that fact, but it's true. And as that becomes more obvious over time, and it's like, oh, you know, he actually did, to Ross Gerber's great chagrin, understand media and social media better than a communications major from Penn State. Sorry to the Penn Staters. I mean, hey, you've got Elon on your side too. So just because you have a few duds, doesn't mean, you know, doesn't reflect poorly on Penn State necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just such a, like, I feel like everything has changed so much in the last week. Like the momentum towards this new reality is very much there, you know, like this is what the world is now. Like what we posited for the longest time, that what we hoped it was, it actually turned out to be the case. And what's funny is that it actually has been like that probably for a while, but this last week feels like the confirmation of this trend came to light in this election. I feel like we have data that now says that, like, yeah, this is actually the new reality. This is the new reality, and anyone who doesn't believe so or say it is, they're out of touch, and they're either not paying attention, or they're willfully ignorant, or worst case scenario, they're trying to weave a narrative that's
narrative. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a whole class of people who've really been trying to wrestle with objective reality, and, you know, maybe they are more accurate on some things than others. But, you know, I think that was one of the huge pieces of signal in all this for me, was that a lot of the very smart, very courageous, independent voices kind of coalesced around the Trump campaign this year, whether that was Elon, but going, you know, I've been following someone like Brett Weinstein for years and years and years. And, you know, at least going back to maybe 2018 and potentially before that. And so to see someone like that, who is definitely started as a barely squarely in the camp of being a Democrat and teaching at one of those left-wing colleges that was very free and open and all that stuff. To see his journey over the last 6 years to be an ardent supporter of Trump in this election. But not only him, a lot of other people in the orbit of those who were very independent.
The intellectual dark web.
The intellectual dark web people. Jordan Peterson would be. Yeah. Well, Sam Harris has, you know, pretty extreme form of TDS. So,
yeah.
Yeah, they, Sam is funny. It's somewhat sad to see where he's at. I do think there are some, like, criticisms that he has of Trump that people do need to keep at the forefront of their mind as they evaluate Trump's actions over the next 4 years. Anyways, yeah, Jordan Peterson, Elon Musk being the biggest example, like that he had thrown his support behind Trump and really secured a lot of influence for himself in what the next administration is going to look like. I hope that he is part of the committee that's making the decision on every single member of cabinet that gets selected.
I think he is.
I'm somewhat concerned by, you know, someone like Marco Rubio being chosen as Secretary of State. I think there were some better options, but I also don't know, you know, what are the conversations that are being had behind those closed doors? And is there a grand plan that makes sense inside of, you know, getting back to the sunlight razor, like, we're not really getting transparency here in this stage of what the plan is. So that doesn't necessarily mean that the plan is bad or the plan is untrustworthy, but it definitely undermines my ability to gauge for myself whether it is a good plan or not. And so right now we just kind of have to extend a little bit of benefit of the doubt. And I do feel better that Elon has a say in some of those decisions. And so even if they don't end up going with what he says, at least he's, his voice is one of the ones that is, you know, factored highly into the ultimate decisions.
But I think what's interesting there, right? Like, so let's say the action of, you know, if Trump says, has said, you know, the neocons are one of the biggest issues.
And the war hawks, yeah.
Here, and the war hawks, right? But then he starts appointing neocons. What is that going to do to his trustworthiness?
It definitely undermines, I feel less positive about where we're potentially headed with that move than I did before I heard that move. You know, when I'm seeing people like Vivek Ramaswamy, like I'm pretty sure Vivek was high in the running, the position of Secretary of State. It sounded like
maybe running for governor of Ohio, I think he said.
Well, and so that's the thing that we don't know, is that they may have found a position for him that is a better position. And so it left a void in that Secretary of State role that they needed to fill. And maybe Marco is the best person for that. And they know they have some concerns about his position. Like, you know, you're not going to find someone who's perfect on every single issue for every single position. So, you know, like I said, I'm not excited about it. It doesn't make me more trusting, but I don't know that it's a, you know, just like game over.
Well, I feel like the only way for him to ensure that the trustworthiness he's been able to build with a voting base remains or comes back is by executing against the policy that he set forth. Right.
And also,
And
also enacting a higher level of public transparency as well. So one of the candidates for head of the CIA has been talking about wanting to run a department at the CIA that their entire job is to declassify things that the American public asks for. And so, you know, it's like a 24/7 hotline. Anyone in America can call up the CIA and say, hey, I want documents on this. And then it's their job to read through that thing. And his directive is, unless there is a present day national security threat attached to those documents, that the rule is, yes, we'll accept your request. We will declassify it and we'll make it public. So like something like that, all of a sudden you just took the transparency around the most secretive, most scary part of the United States government. You multiply it by like a factor of 100 or 1,000, like instead of the default of everything that ever gets said, like, hey, let's go get coffee tomorrow at 11 o'clock. Well, that's, you know, classified. Now you're saying, hey, even things that were important, but they're not really relevant anymore, like even those things get to be declassified if someone requests them. Holy cow. And like, you know, there's a lot of people who know where the skeletons are buried who can ask questions if the ability to bring the skeletons out of the closet actually gets instantiated. And so, you know, like that's something that's really exciting. We'll have to wait and see if we actually get something like that. But yeah, that would restore a level of public trust in
massive
Wash DC that we haven't had in decades.
Yeah. For like 1,000%. Just releasing the JFK files alone will do a huge, I think will be a huge service. But I think sort of extending that to literally anything would be great. And you know what would be a great tool to use to, you know, because the it sounds like a daunting task to like find enough people to sit down and go through documents and make sure that it can be declassified. Artificial intelligence sounds like a pretty good thing to have to do that. You know what I'm saying? Can you figure out if we should declassify this or not? Now think about how much, imagine building a database of that stuff for artificial intelligence to then make decisions sometime in the future.
Let's go train an LLM on all the CIA data.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah. Can you imagine?
That would be a dark LLM. Talk about, you know, training a Shoggoth.
Dark GPT. Yeah. Yeah, but I think you've hit the nail on the head It's like transparency is everything. Authenticity is everything. Transparency, authenticity, being willing to just be open. Just be open.
Yeah.
We have to get away from this like decades long training of the American public to be used to like this fake polished mm-hmm. thing that is not really how humans converse with each other. It's like it's entertainment more than anything. It's not really real. It's fake. It's make-believe. You know, like we've turned politics into make-believe. It's not really like even debates are make-believe. You know, we need to turn them into like how people just talk. Like we need a return or a dawn of authenticity more than anything. And now is the time. We have the technology in podcasts and social media. We have the willingness and we have the mandate from the public that this is what they want. And from a first principles perspective, it's by far the easiest way to get shit done. If the public trusts you, you will not have obstacles.
Yeah.
You know, your obstacles go down by 90%, 99%. You know, so it's like, why? And I think that's why Elon's so successful, because he knows that. And he harnesses that energy. And that's what allows him to do what he does. You know?
Well, and we've seen him like go all in on this value, this principle, especially with X.
Yeah.
That he knew that the only way to gain back public trust at X was to release the Twitter files when he 100%. Took over. And so he used that transparency to regain public trust for those who were not infected with, you know, an insane left-wing partisan bias, and ended up, you know, fleeing to Threads anyways. So yeah, that I think that example is what makes a lot of people excited about his ability to do something like that, whether it's, you know, excited that he could reduce the size of government like he did at X, or increase the transparency of the government like he did at X. Like either one of those things would be great. If we get both at the same time, holy cow, that would be amazing.
Yeah. Would be incredible. A true golden age, I think, of the United States. I think so many obstacles will be removed and so many things will be ahead of us to sort of start executing on. Because you're just going to enable so many different great things to happen by having those two things, you know?
And it does, you know, this is something that creates a battleground between, I think, you know, smart, principled, well-intentioned people sometimes, is that there's two views. That one of them is that the government is a tool to do the good things in the world that we want to do. And so for those types of people, this can kind of be scary, because it's like, oh, you're limiting, like, government's my favorite tool to get crap done, and you're telling me that you're going to make my favorite tool less effective. Well, that's, or, you know, they think that it's going to be less effective because it gets smaller,
right,
or more transparent. But then there's a whole other contingent of smart, principled, well-intentioned people who think that government is kind of a cancer on society, or at least, you know, the U.S. administrative state is a cancer on American society and the world writ large, based on our level of influence in the world.
Yeah.
And for those people, that's why this looks like the potential for a golden age, is like, that's the big problem. And if we can solve that problem and restore government of the people, by the people, and for the people, that's responsive to the people. And this is the thing that, you know, I think the vast majority of all people feel, is that the government is anything but responsive to the actual people, that we can 100%. Like, our votes don't matter because we're only given choices between people that are not, like, you can vote for this person who's not going to work in your best interest, or this person who's not going to work in your best interest. Enjoy democracy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
that's what it has felt like for decades. And so, you know, I think that's why there's this rebellion against the system, is because we've been, you know, living inside of that reality for so long. And we realize that the people who want to tear down the, you know, self-serving government, self-growing ice cream cone, self-licking systems.
Yeah.
Like that's what we need to fix.
Yeah. 100%. Couldn't agree more. And it's, yeah, like you said, it feels like we actually have a chance to do that now.
Yeah.
And that's so exciting.
It is.
So exciting.
Well, in the past 4 years, like that is, I just think so crazy and ironic. But if we hadn't had the last 4 years, like if Trump had been elected in 2020 instead of in 2024, and the last 4 years had been served, you know, Trump had been the president, I don't know that Elon Musk get to the level of clarity about where the problems are.
Yeah.
Like, does Elon Musk decide that government efficiency is one of his number one priorities if Trump was president for the last 4 years? I don't know.
It's almost like there was a threshold, right? If like, if the threshold of like government getting in his way was a
below a certain level. Yeah.
Yeah. Then he wouldn't have touched it. But because like it went from 60 to 65%, now that 65% has triggered him to get that down to zero. Otherwise, it would have been at 60% and he would have just lived with it. You know? So that's a, what a fascinating thought. It's like it had to break, it had to get to a ridiculous level for it to fix itself.
Fully. Well, and in that ridiculous level that it got to coalesce not only Elon, but like for Elon and Tulsi Gabbard and RFK Jr., for all of those people who were all squarely in the Democrat Party before this, to all get mobilized and motivated to be on this train. Like that, the last 4 years was the thing that created this coalition of centrist people. Like, I think if Trump had continued, like we still would have been much more divided between, you know, some sane people on both sides of the aisle. So you got, you know, your crazy right wing, your crazy left wing, and then your more sensible, moderate right wing and left wing, but they're divided. And so the normal moderate people are still kind of against each other. And now like a lot of the sane people from the Democratic Party have all joined this coalition, and you know, it still remains to be seen. But if the dominant force in the new coalition skews in Elon's direction, which is that super intelligent, left of center, highly principled, common sense, like classic liberalism, like if classic liberalism becomes the center around which this new coalition makes decisions, then man, that's a great of American principles and values that can animate our government and our nation moving forward.
100%. And it's the pendulum swinging back so violently. That's the only reason why we're here, is because this pendulum swung too far, and now we have to literally grasp it back. And it's like speaks to just
how the media's gaslighting of us on every issue, and on top of COVID, on top of
election interference
and
lawfare
and sexually mutilating children who don't understand what they're doing to their bodies. Like, you know, every single one of these issues might have got someone different, but all of these things happening at the same time got like everybody off the bench and in the game and unified about, wow, like whatever that thing is that produced all those different things at the same time.
Broken,
and we got to go fix it.
100%. And now we're here. Exciting.
Very much.
Yeah.
Now we can demand transparency from all of them that say they want to fix those problems.
That's right.
And hopefully. And
you know what that's called that we haven't had in a really long time?
Democracy.
Journalism.
Oh, well, that too. Yeah.
This whole time we're trying to fix something. It's like, hey, there's a word for it. Journalism.
Yeah.
This is like.
Yeah. Yeah, that's so true.
Yeah. This is what journalism's supposed to be.
Yeah, people are so focused on, you know, we need to get the money out of politics. And, you know, I think there's a lot to that. But
you don't know about journalism.
When you realize that the problem, that so many of the problems that we have stem from a lack of journalism. And you realize the reason that we have a lack of journalism is because all the journalists are paid by like the same 10 people.
Yeah.
Then you realize the money in journalism is a bigger problem than the money in politics.
Yeah. Crazy. Crazy.
I'll make one more point.
Okay.
So yeah, if the landscape of journalism is completely messed up, I wonder what we could do to disrupt the landscape of journalism. Maybe we need to own a social media platform and make citizen journalism like the number one incentivized activity on said platform.
Yeah. I wonder if somebody will take that on.
I hope so.
That sounds like a very valuable thing for society.
Maybe something that could literally change the course of society.
Yeah. If there's any billionaires watching this and you're out there trying to build a platform where citizen journalism is incentivized and can change the course of elections, please, please do something about it. Thank you. Thank you very much.